designation?
My name is Roberta Wood, and I'm a retired school teacher teaching mainly in infant, first and primary schools. In fact, I taught in the school in which I was taught myself.
So please can you tell me a little bit about your home background, right, your parents and your schooling?
I was a war baby, and my father was 50 when I was born and my mother was 48, and my brother and sister were 19 and 23 years older than I, so I was really born into a historical family. My father was a coal miner and a strong trade unionist, and he said he left school at 11 after passing an exam. That was in Carlisle, and eventually came to Haltwhistle to work in the mines. My mother's family were highly intelligent, but all of them been born in the 19th century. They had no chance of a higher education living in Haltwhistle. My father was a very strong influence on me, even though it was may have been taking me to the pictures. I am an expert on the British films of the 1940s and 50s.
What about school?
Right. I've started school at the County Infant School, large classes, and the only thing I can remember there has been taught about Eskimos and shillings and pence. And then on down the road to the junior school from the age of 7 to 11. And then I passed the 11 plus and went on to Queen Elizabeth Grammar School at Hexham.
So can you remember anything about the way you were taught history, either at primary or at secondary school?
Junior school, I think I was taught by stories and legends. In the first year, Standard 1, I know we definitely had Romulus and Remus. In Standard 2, which was coronation year, it was Christopher Columbus and Elizabeth I. Haven't a clue about Standard 3. And in Standard 4, the new headmaster introduced the brand new textbooks by Unsted. The one we had was Queen Anne to Queen Elizabeth. These books were little chunks of text on social history and pictures, very little particulars, but what was interesting, they showed you how people dressed and what they did, as opposed to just having a story of Christopher Columbus, because when you were 9, if you didn't have a picture, he could have been dressed in a collar and tie and a suit. So they were interesting in that way. The other thing was that the headmaster decided to have houses to improve school morale and called them after the 4 local castles. So the top class were asked to find out about them, and my father gave me a book on local history where I dutifully copied out the stories, complete with medieval text and everything.
Excellent.
So that got me interested in local history. But mainly the teaching of history was the teacher told the story and then we drew a picture, if we were lucky, and then wrote the story afterwards. And spellings were always corrected. I'm a useless speller. So that's more or less junior school.
What about secondary then?
Grammar school, we had very good teachers of history, and we started with the Greeks and Romans. In fact, I think we started with the Cretans.
Cretans.
Very early civilizations, and we went on up to the fifth form when we finished off doing the courses of the Second World War for O level, and it was mainly chalk and talk textbooks, and you would write essays, and occasionally you could write an essay as if you were at the spot.
Yes, imagine you were
watching the battle, the charge of the Life Brigade. That's one I can remember. And then in the sixth form, I did Tudors and Stuarts. And I mean, I'd always been very keen on history, way back from when I was small. And so it was a natural progression to do A-level history. And from there, I chose to go to training college, mainly because of financial reasons, because to go into a dip in ed in those days meant 4 years as opposed to 3. And remember, my father was 65 when I was 15.
So he was retired by then?
He was retired by then.
So we'll pick up from there. So you did a
teaching certificate at Bristol, at Redland College in Bristol. And from then I went into teaching. I did a year in a junior school in Birmingham, and then I taught 5 years in Gateshead, and then I came back to Haltwhistle to teach in the school that I'd grown up in.
And you were there for the rest of your career. So thinking back to that, the early days of your teaching, how did you come to include history in what you were doing?
In those days, you had projects and you could, well, really in infant teaching, you could do what you like. I'll come to that in a moment. In Gateshead, we were given the same textbooks that I had had at my junior school, which were these Unstead ones, and we just worked our way through Unstead. But occasionally, you know, you would add details to make it more interesting. And
when you say worked your way through, how would you use the books?
Yeah. In Standard 1, you had Cavemen to Vikings. In Standard 2, it was medieval. Standard 3, it was the Tudors and the Stuarts. And Standard 4, you were back with Queen Anne to Queen Elizabeth. So you literally, one section per week in the history lesson, and you couldn't really elaborate on it very much. And it was quite a strict head at the time who liked you, who told you what to do. When I moved to Haltwhistle...
Can I ask you what you actually did in the lesson with the children?
Talked. And then they drew a picture and wrote a story.
So essentially what you...
I taught it more or less by the way we were done. And to a certain extent, in those days, that was the only way you could teach history. I can't think of another way I could, at that stage, being a young teacher, I don't think of a way I could have done it. I mean, and you were horrified at the assumptions the children made. I was talking to a friend about it, and she said she was doing the cavemen, and this little girl wrote a lovely story about the cavemen and wearing furs and everything like that. And it was very dark in their caves, but they couldn't see the television. You know, and you forget that you must, and it sort of grew on you through the years, that you not think you know what the cavemen like, but they think a cave is just another semi-detached house, or words to that effect. And you have got to stress to them that things were very different, and they would be dirty and smelly. And I always thought, later on, toilets for the boys were a very good interest.
Did you do anything about teaching history during your training at Redland?
No. We had the policy... Now, let me think. Can you better switch it? Sorry.
Yeah, it wasn't right.
Mm-hmm. When I was at training college, we had a very good history tutor who taught us to, as a history specialist, and to enjoy history for its own sake. We started off with the Beaker people and continued right up to the present day. The only aid she gave us on teaching history was to say, if you want a day in London, I shall speak to the principal, but organise it yourselves. You will have to organise school trips when you become teachers. And so we had several days in London that way. We then had education as a separate subject, and they were the ones that taught us how to go into schools and to prepare our lessons, to prepare our material and make wall displays and things like that. I must admit, I enjoyed the history teaching more than the education.
So when you went on teaching practice, did you actually use any history then?
When you went on teaching practice, you had to do what the teacher wanted you to do. Mm-hmm. And it really was, you had to follow in with whatever the school was doing. Some people were very lucky and got good schools, and they could go to town on their displays and everything like that. And in two cases, I got very remote country schools who just wanted you to teach the children, keep them quiet. And it wasn't really, you know, imagine a very old Victorian church school classroom, and there's no room for display in places like that. But you did the best you could and went through it. So, right.
Going back to the early days in Birmingham and then in Gateshead, you told me you worked through Unstead in the different years. Did you take the children on any trips or do any practical work with them?
I took them to Newcastle Castle once because we walked there. It was very near the river in Gateshead. But otherwise, no. In Birmingham, I took the children a trip to Warwick, but I think it was only because the children expect, it was a very poor area of Birmingham, and the fact that someone was brave enough to take them on a trip, on an outing, anywhere, the head would have approved of, so we went to Warwick Castle, but they enjoyed it, but they didn't appreciate the significance of it. They were only very small, and some of them hadn't seen a cow.
Goodness.
It was very poor. But they were lovely children. Gateshead, we did occasionally go on outings, but they were always localised, and mainly to see to a museum or to the castle at Newcastle, the keep.
Did you enjoy using Unstead to teach with?
No, I thought it was boring. I've taught a long time, you know, when you do things, time after everything becomes boring. But no, there was no dates in Unstead. It was very wishy-washy. And I know that Richard III was killed at the Battle of Bosworth Field, and therefore ended the Middle Ages, and the Tudors and Stuarts started the next day. But nobody changed their clothes, their habits, or anything like that. But when you were taught, you got the impression that it from some books, that is what happens.
Did you feel Unstead was like that?
Unstead was rather like that. It did give a sense of continuity, but you felt that things changed when the king changed. And it didn't. It was when you got up to Shakespeare's second best bed to Anne Hathaway that you realised that things had to last a long time and people could be left clothes in people's wills or something. But that's an adult thing, not a childish thing.
Mm. So how did you develop your teaching of history when you came to Holtwhistle?
When I came to Holtwhistle, the head was very keen on projects, and you could do a project about anything you like. In fact, it was the 1970s must have been one of the best times to teach, because you could do anything within reason. I mean, there was no health and safety regulations. I could take 30 children for a walk up by a river. And we were all quite safe, and we all came home quite safely. But now, and she worked on the project scheme, so you could, if she passed the project, you could do what you like. So I tended to do a lot of history projects, which also coincided with some good BBC programmes. I think the programme was called Zigzag, and then there was Watch. Watch was the Egyptians, and you had Cy Grant singing Hideous Calypsos. But they were very good, but there was ancient Egypt was one. I know the Anglo-Saxons was another. They were based on stories. You had a little bit of teaching and then a part of a serial story, and they were very good and the children enjoyed them, and you could do a lot of work from them.
What date was that when you were using those programs?
That would be in the early 70s.
So the school had a...
Oh, we had a television, then. We had television in Gateshead too. We didn't use it very much. But the television was used more as an educational source when I came to Holtwhistle. and it was, they were good programs, but by the time you'd done them, they came out every other year, and I was teaching a long time, so when you got them for about the sixth time, you could do the vocabulary with them and the program, and the films were getting raggy round the edges. But the children quite liked them, and they did it there.
Did you buy the materials to go with?
Just switch it off for my husband then. But we did have Robin Burley, and you got bits of pottery and things like that that he would leave behind it. You know, hadn't bothered recording. And I will say here, and that, which isn't part of it, Robin Burley was very good in getting teenagers interested in archaeology, because I know his methods weren't quite approved by the powers that be in the archaeology world, because he used but a lot of school children went up in the holidays and as part of their history curriculum to dig for that. And this young girl I was talking to said, I didn't do history at O level, but I was digging at Vindolanda, so I liked it so much I did history at A level. And then she's gone on to university college and become a teacher. So, yes.
So maybe some of them started off in your classroom.
Oh, quite a few of them did.
But what about visits? Because you mentioned visits that you undertook with the children.
Visits could be variable. I remember taking them to Housesteads once, and they were more interested in the curator's cat than the wall, but they did take a lot of it. Vindoland is very good, especially in the 90s, when he was doing his replicas of shops and houses and things like that. If we were doing medieval times or castles, we took them to the Carlisle Castle, Newcastle, and various other things.
Mentioned Jarrow, actually, in the...
Oh, yeah, sorry, I'd forgotten about Jarrow. Jarrow was the Anglo-Saxon church of Bede, the monk, and we took them there, and I think it was one education authority had put in a lot of money into it, and you had teachers there who just took over. But they dressed the children in monks' habits, and they had to pretend to be monks. And one of them was to listen for five things that Bede could hear, such as birds singing, the wind, rain, to show them that some things hadn't changed. And you got a chance to do medieval various things, but mainly it was the dressing up and saying the prayers and everything. So Jarrow was a good visit. And another visit was English Heritage had a teacher, something, I can't remember a proper title, at Aden Castle outside Corbridge, medieval castle. And when it first started, you took groups of children there to live the medieval experience. It was a terrible teacher day when it was snowing when we went, and we called it Pneumonia Salmonella Day. But when we took the children, it was generally, Northumberland by this time had become based on first, middle and high schools. So that was 5 to 9, 9 to 13, and 13 to 18. And
so was Haltwhistle a first school?
Yes.
You went up to age 9?
We went up to age 9, and then the middle school further up the road was 9 to 13, and they went to Hayden Bridge for the high school. The Aden Castle experience was designed for middle schools, but because I was keen and I'd gone on the course, and a friend of mine knew Leslie, and the head was very keen and was retiring, she signed us up for a week of the Aden Castle experience, so everybody went from 5 to 9. And when the idea was the middle school children would cook their own lunch, so I said to Leslie, no way is a 6-year-old going to eat a lunch. So we agreed that they would bring their own lunch. and she greeted them as the lady of the manor in medieval costume, and would try to rig up all the children in something approaching medieval costume. But we said they had to take a medieval lunch. You couldn't buy a carton of apple juice in Holwhistle the day after, because that was the only thing we would let them drink, that milk or water. And they could take boiled eggs and a chicken leg and anything that was around medieval times, which eliminated crisps, chocolate biscuits, anything like that. And when we got to Aden, we did a play. They could dip candles, they could write with quill pens, and they really, the whole school, I think, enjoyed it. We never did it again, which I always thought was a pity, because we got a new head and she wasn't very keen. But for them to experience what it was like and how cold it could be was very good.
When you were doing that sort of trip, did you invest a lot of time beforehand with the children learning about castle life?
Oh yes, it was always the end of the project rather than the beginning, so that they knew what to expect when we would talk about it and things like that. We did the medieval lunch for Jarrow as well. We did try to, you know, of making them realise how limited food was in those days. No potatoes.
You mentioned here about textbooks. Now, obviously, Unstead was where you started. How did textbooks change in relation to your teaching at Holwhistle?
They came a lot more colourful. There was a lot more pictures, not so much text. I can remember one, but I can't remember what it was that there was a hideous mistake in. Now it got through, I don't know. But when you used Unstead, each child had an Unstead, or there was at least one between two. When these new colourful textbooks came out, you couldn't afford 30. And of course you could replace them more often, so the textbooks were used more as reference books. And they had, and of course teaching, when I started teaching, it was two in a desk facing the blackboard, and you got into, then you went into the table situation.
When did you move to tables, do you think?
When I went to Holwhistle.
So that's early 70s?
That's early 70s. I can't, but that was a change of school rather than, they had been using tables for years at Holwhistle.
So what age groups, did you always teach the same age group at Holwhistle?
I went from 6-year-old to 9-year-old, and we always sat in tables. When I was at Gateshead, it was a junior school, and in those days junior schools sat in twos. By the time I'd left, you were beginning to go into the table and
groups
situation, yes. So a book could be put for each group, or you did a lot of teaching sitting in the corner showing pictures, which was good, and talking from that and using lots of pictures. And I also collect, every time I went on a museum, to a museum or anything historical, I used to collect postcards and photographs and put them up around the classroom and things like that for them to look at. And you'd think, are they looking? And it was surprising what they did notice from something like that.
So how did you use the more colourful textbooks? Are we talking about the 70s and 80s new textbooks coming in then?
Yes.
Or even later with the national curriculum?
No, they came in much before the national curriculum. I hate to say it, but ladybirds were very good.
Well, there's a whole series on historical topics.
Yes, and historical people. And there was a lot of writing for my age of child, but the pictures in them were very good. And they did go more for pictures. Then we got a head who threw out anything that was, she looked at the publishing date rather than the matter. So a lot of stuff went out. When a lot of old books did have very good illustrations. But I think children were beginning to learn more by looking than by reading.
Do you think that's a gradual trend that occurred?
I think so. No way. I think when I look at some of the books that were in my junior school at 11, I can't say, because I've never been in the middle school library, whether they would be in the middle school library for 11-year-olds. Mm-hmm. But I think in everything there's more pictures and less reading matter.
What were the main influences on your approach to teaching history? Perhaps apart from the TV series that you'd used, what other things influenced you?
Well, I just liked history, and therefore my class were going to like history. Therefore we had history. I could introduce the history of anything at the drop of a hat. No, I exaggerate, but...
Did you have favourite topics?
Yes, I suppose so. I was just thinking back there, we never ever did the Tudors. Or we did Saxon, and we must have done medieval. Oh, that was when I was doing a thing of my own on Haltwhistle. I was just thinking, because it coincided with Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Now, that was 1990, because it was being made when I got the year I got married, because I used to pass it. You know, when they filmed the famous sycamore tree, yeah. That's on the Roman wall at Sycamore Gap. And when I married, we lived in Fourstones for a few years. And as I drove past in the morning, you could see the film cameras. So that's about the one film. But there's a marvellous sequence in it in which the Sheriff of Nottingham burns down Little John's village in the forest. And you see all these bedraggled medieval peasants. All the children, they must have been later than that, been on the television. I said, who saw? And I got some fantastic writing from that. And I sort of really put it in, you know, that they would be dirty and they couldn't get washed and they didn't have hot water coming out of taps. And yeah, so things like that helped. But if we were doing anything about Haltwhistle, you know, what they used to call local studies, finding out your... It would be, well, when I was little, or when so-and-so was little. And we did a lot of local history in my class, because I could go back to it. And you better switch it off, and then we'll decide whether...
I'll ask you that. You ready?
Right. When we did the Victorians, we went to Beamish quite frequently and experienced most of the trams, trains. I can remember one group looking at the steam train belching very black smoke and saying, what a lot of pollution. But one of their favourite places was the coal mine, and which was, as they came from a coal mining area, which they had all forgotten about because the mines had been closed so long, they used to go down and enjoy it. But when we did the Victorians, having a walk-in cupboard, I quite often gave them the experience of being in there with only one lighted candle. And the writing afterwards was fantastic about what they felt like. Going back to Beamish, they enjoyed it. They also enjoyed the shop a lot. They don't get the opportunity. Living in a small town, there's a lot of experiences children don't get. I took them on the train once, just as far as Barden Mill. I only did it once, because nowadays everybody goes by car or bus. And my old teacher that I used to go and visit said, Roberta, I was in the hairdressers, and this little boy came and said, I've been on the train, it was fantastic. She said, and his face was great. She says, I asked him who his teacher was, and he said, Miss Story, so I knew it was you. But, I think visits and picking visits carefully are very important.
When you were teaching children, obviously going from age 6 to age 9, were you consciously leading them from simpler things to more difficult things?
Well, I didn't teach them at the same time.
No.
No.
But over
the... Yes, you know, I suppose... You did go into more depth when you had the 9-year-olds than you would for the 6-year-olds. And when I was teaching the 6-year-olds, that was generally more television based. 8 and 9-year-olds was more. You did watch the television, but there was a lot more writing and things like that.
Did you have topics which you did in particular years?
Yes, as they appeared on the BBC.
So it wasn't the case that you said chronologically we must start with...
No, we never did anything chronologically, and I think that's a great shame, because even you can't fit. And if you listen to a quiz show nowadays, you can see they haven't been taught chronologically. If you watch something like Anne Robinson's thing, if there's a young person on it, I often find A, their history knowledge is not very good, and B, they can't I can't describe this properly, but if they had a sense of chronology, would be able to answer the question.
Do you think that your sense of chronology came from doing Unstead in order?
I wouldn't say Unstead in order, but definitely from my starting off with pre-civilization at the grammar school and working
up. Yes.
I mean, I've got a very hazy period about from Queen, I would say the end of the 1688 to George III is come. I have got very little knowledge of it at all. It's a complete blank. But I know which order the kings and queens came in, because I learned them when I was 9.
But you didn't teach them to your children in school?
No, because it wasn't done. You couldn't teach tables, you couldn't teach anything by rote.
How do you feel about that now?
Well, I enjoyed learning my tables. My husband didn't. And I learned... I was very proud when I could say all the kings and queens of England off in order. But it isn't done, is it? So you can't really... You just sort of say, oh, there's 2 little girls live next door and they come in. And I mean, they came in to thank me for their Easter eggs, and I put them through a cross-examination on what they were doing at school. And it's very... They weren't very sure, they were done various subjects under the national curriculum, but they weren't quite sure which order they came in.
Well, that brings us very nearly to the national curriculum, because the last 8 years of your teaching career, there was a national curriculum. So how did that affect your teaching?
Well, I think it helped. It didn't affect mine so much, because we always knew every other teacher was doing in the school. But, I mean, you heard horrific cases of people who did dinosaurs 5 times in 5 years, and I can understand that was why the national curriculum, to a certain extent, was brought in. And it was a shame that some good schools had to suffer for the sins of the others. I think, in a way, it is a good thing. It does teach certain aspects of British history, but it misses out a lot.
What does it miss out?
You better switch this off while I have effects.
Are we? Can I ask you about the role of history in creating children's sense of national identity? Do you think that at the level you were teaching at first school, there's any element of that?
Not as much as there used to be. I just thought that my brother and sister, who were 20 years older than me, had a much more sense of being British and English. I still, because they did things like the Queen's Birthday and Empire Day and things like that. And when I first started teaching in Haltwhistle, we still celebrated Commonwealth Day. But when that head left, so did Commonwealth Day. I think learning about British history is important. Now, have I mentioned this, that I had a Scottish friend? No, right, I had a Scottish... I shared a flat with this girl from Scotland, and she did not know any English history up to 1603, because they didn't do any, and I didn't know any Scottish history up to 1603, when we both got the same king, and then we could relate to the same things in history. Before that, we hadn't a clue. So, that was just England and Scotland. So I suppose if you're a person of another race now coming to live in England, it should be very important, I think, that you learn the history of the country that you are living in, but it isn't your history or the history of your parents. And it very much depends on your parents' outlook, whether I think they would want you to be taught about Robin Hood, not the BBC version, or Richard the Lionheart, who wasn't exactly a good king, Henry the Eighth, other things than the wives. But if you don't do Henry VIII and the dissolution of the monasteries and Anne Boleyn in a political sense, you can't understand quite a lot of the history of this country and why its alliances and that in the past were formed and that alliances in the future are formed, and why theoretically there should be such a good connection between this country and America on the fact that we're common stock, in inverted commas. And therefore I do, but I haven't taught in a big city school for a long time, so I don't know what the thinking of the children there is when they have a history lesson.
But talking from your own experience of the children here in Haltwhistle, who are obviously very rooted in a community that their parents, grandparents and ancestors have lived in, I wouldn't have thought there's a lot of turnover of children here. Was it important to give them a sense of national as well as local identity?
And I think it is important to know your history, because if you can't understand history, you don't know what's going on in politics at the present moment.
So when you were teaching, were you conscious of that?
Well, I wanted them to know what had happened in the past so they would know what would happen and could happen in the future if they weren't very careful.
So a sort of moral dimension to history.
Yes, I mean, it's very... very easy for someone to take control. I remember the said history tutor when I was at college saying, we are very lucky, we don't live in it was at the height of the Cold War, a nation like Russia. But what could turn us into a nation like Russia? And we said, if the same party wins the next general election. Because it would then have meant the Conservative, who was in power in the night, yes, the Conservative, would have been in power for about 50, this is an analogy to what is happening now. Fortunately, or unfortunately, the Labour Party at that time won the next general election, so it broke the run of power. But if it could happen.
What sort of assessment do you think is suited to primary school pupils?
Not stars on the wall. I used to like it, but I think it's very defeating to the person who never gets a star. Then you get cheaters who stick them on. I quite liked the old-fashioned test, but that again, when you had to... I was quite proud of getting 10 out of 10 for it, but if you only got 3 out of 10... hard look. I think the individual comment on a person's work is the best way.
Yes.
There's no way you can reward a good child without making the poor child feel sorry for himself, if you see what
I do. I do. Can I ask you whether technology, apart from the television, was in any way relevant to your work?
Only at the very end, and we were a bit behind because we weren't very computer literate, all being aged teachers.
Did you use overhead projectors?
No, we'd had one.
What about making worksheets and photocopying?
Is that technology? Yes, we believed in making worksheets. Yes, photocopiers were a boon when you could do something like that, or make a quiz sheet, or children making their own books and having them stapled. Computers didn't produce the information. We hadn't got up to Google. Mm-hmm. when I left. So yeah, I think Google is great, even though that funny encyclopedia, there's a lot of mistakes in it occasionally.
Do you think that history in primary school today is in a healthier state than in the past or not?
Depends how far back you go into the past. Into the 1950s past, I think history was better, was done more frequently and more thoroughly than it is done today. My cross-examination of the two little girls next door, I got the feeling that a lot of work has been done towards SATs, and the humanities get pushed out a bit.
And that was what the comment you were making. I feel that history has slipped down the league table of subjects and is an additional subject if there is time.
Mm.
And that's just an impression you've gained from others, or
from, well, I wouldn't say from, it's just reading things. I still get the teacher, and you get very little work on that, and it's all about SATs. And talking to colleagues, I go in about once every 2 years now to do old toys, because I've been a hoarder. I've still got my old dolls and that, and I go in, and I'm now pushed to the very end. I'm the fill-in, you know, just before the Christmas parties, whereas once upon a time, it would be done, I wouldn't say better, but there would be more work on the walls. Now we're doing about old things, and Mrs. Wood's got a lot of old toys, so we'll have her in, sort of style.
That's interesting. Finally, on a positive note, if you could choose any historical topic to teach, what would it be, and to what age group?
I think the Elizabethans.
Even though you said you didn't do the Tudors.
We never did the Tudors. I was actually, I'd never really thought about your questions till today, and I was looking at them. And I was thinking, oh, you could do super displays on the Tudors. And it's the richness of the court scenes in Elizabethan clothes. And it was a time of change. And yes, I think the Tudors, rather than, but they're sort of been pushed, until recently they were pushed to the back of history, weren't they?
Things
of the historical subjects with young children to do.
And which age group would you be doing that with?
Oh, well, I've never taught anything older than 9, so it would have 8 to 9s, they're nice. They haven't got, well, when I taught them, they hadn't got too cheeky.
We'll finish with that. Thank you very much.